President Obama stands by Attorney General Eric Holder after the controversy involving the Justice Department secretly seizing phone records from the Associated Press. But he does not stand by the acting IRS commissioner for giving Tea Party groups extra scrutiny with their tax-exempt status applications.
Yesterday, I directed Secretary Liu to follow up on the IG audit to see how this happened and who was responsible and to make sure that we understand all the facts. Today, Secretary Liu took the first step by requesting and accepting the resignation of the acting commissioner of the IRS. Because given the controversy surrounding this audit, it's important to institute new leadership that can help restore confidence going forward.
We will discuss these two controversies and the Benghazi attack talking point story, plus other top stories in state politics during this edition of our Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's good to have you with us on this Friday, May 17th. We have two guests with us from differing political perspectives, and we invite your perspectives, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. There's quite a list there already of listeners suggesting topics to discuss this hour. And you can tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So let's welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us today Kevin Hermaning, political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for the invitation to join you and your guests, your listeners this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. Ed Filone is also with us, associate professor of law at Marquette University. And happy birthday, Ed Filone.
Thank you. Aren't you nice, Joy?
Yeah, we saw that on Facebook. So have a very happy birthday. Welcome back to the Week in Review. Let's start with the IRS story. The former IRS head, Stephen Miller, will be testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee this morning about the extra scrutiny that the IRS gave Tea Party groups that applied for tax-exempt status. Apparently, this began in March of 2010. It lasted for more than 18 months. The IRS now being ripped by lawmakers from both parties and President Obama. As we heard, he essentially fired the acting IRS commissioner for this story. Kevin Hermaning, let's start with you. Your reaction to this story and the administration's response.
Well, listen, it's quite ironic that they would ask for the head of somebody who did not even fill the position that he's now being fired from, nor the responsibilities were owned by him at that point in time. Mr. Miller has only been the acting commissioner since November of last year, for crying out loud, after the election of the president, the re-election of the president. And so they're going after somebody who had no responsibility for taking ownership, if you will, of this scandal, of the activities by the IRS and the targeting of the opponents of the president, opponents with regard to, the Tea Party groups and the religious conservative organizations, the conservative Christian groups such as Billy Graham's organization. And Mr. Miller, the one who actually fixed it, who got to the bottom of it and worked closely with those people who were charged with bringing this to light, such as Lois Lerner, the exempt organization's president, if you will, or department chief. And so they're going after the wrong people. I think what this is an example of another example, which has happened for the last 4.5 years, of throwing up chaff, if you will, a diversion from what really went on, from the real people who are responsible, which I believe, as in any entity, company, business, nonprofit organization, or government entity, the fish rots from the head.
Yeah, let's get Ed Filone to comment on the story and the response.
Well, I think that the first thing to make clear is that this was a mistake by the IRS, and it was inappropriate in trying to address a real problem, which is the potential for excessive and unlawful political activity by these 501c4 organizations, something that has increased since the Citizen United case by the Supreme Court allowed these 501c4s to accept corporate money and engage in electioneering activity on behalf of candidates for the first time. There is a real problem in trying to prevent these tax-exempt organizations, which are formed to serve the public welfare. They're supposed to be general welfare organizations. They're supposed to serve goals that have broader societal application. They are not supposed to be narrowly partisan. They are not supposed to serve narrow interests, and they are not supposed to predominantly be engaged in political activity. So we have a real problem of trying to police these organizations in the aftermath of the Citizens United decision that allowed them to do this. But what is clear is that it was inappropriate to only try to police organizations that had the word Tea Party in the name or that otherwise indicated a conservative political bent. What was more appropriate, what should have happened, would be a broad general policing of the entire political spectrum.
President Obama will appoint Senior White House Budget Officer Daniel Werfel to be the new acting head of the IRS. He worked with the Bush administration. President Obama says he's optimistic about fixing the IRS's problems and vows to make sure the agency is doing its job without any bias. So Ed Filon first, is replacing the IRS chief enough, or should something else be done?
I think that that's the appropriate response. I think that what we had here in Cincinnati is the office that oversees the nonprofit review process for the IRS. And I think we had relatively mid-level employees who mismanaged this. And I think the real responsibility is that when it became apparent that there was a problem, and it's probably been about a year that the IRS top management knew that this had been going on and that it had to be addressed, I think that there was a unforgivable lag and delay in addressing it fully, and also a lag and a delay in bringing it to the attention of both the Obama administration and members of Congress. And so I think it is appropriate for top management basically to fall on the spear for not moving this along and resolving it more quickly.
We know Kevin Hermany, you think he's the wrong guy, but what else should be done then?
Well, listen, the guy who ran the tax-exempt office in Cincinnati, Joe Grant, is a former staffer, a Democratic staffer on the House Ways and Means Committee. This has clearly been something that didn't just now occur. It started in 2010. I don't think it's a coincidence that that's when the Tea Party organization started to take root across the United States, including in Wisconsin, of course. And that's when shortly thereafter is when we saw the recall of Governor Walker begin. I think there's a lot more to this story. It's kind of the tip of the iceberg. And I think what you're going to see is a lot more investigatory efforts take place by the House and perhaps by the Senate. I don't know if we're going to see a special counsel appointed. And as Speaker Boehner said or asked yesterday, who's going to go to jail over this? This is an extreme overreach by the most powerful entity in our federal government other than the Department of Defense. And so here you have the IRS targeting not just, as Ed said, conservative Tea Party organizations and those which engage in political education and perhaps political electioneering, but also organizations like Billy Graham's organization, which basically or essentially came out in favor of the Defense of Marriage Act and the efforts in the southeast part of the United States. And we're learning of individuals who have been on TV, who have been targeted over the last couple of years for audit. And I think there's a lot more to this story, and I don't think that it's going to end with Stephen Miller's resignation and the appointment of this new acting commissioner.
Tom in Madison joins us with a related comment. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, gentlemen. I appreciate your voicing up on these issues. Good job, and a happy birthday. I understand it was about a 70-30 split between conservative and quote, liberal organizations that whose applications were delayed. My understanding was the actual head of the agency itself was a an appointee that had been held over from the previous administrations. You know, let's get the people responsible. Let's deal with them. But let's get off of these distractions and get some jobs back in this country. People don't care. People want work. You know, seriously. 5014, there's people. I talk to a lot of people. The general consensus is a lot of these groups shouldn't be tax exempt to begin with. So let's move on.
Thank you, Tom. Kevin, it was a Bush appointee who was in charge at the time, according to our caller, and 30% of the groups that were targeted were liberal groups, is his claim. So does that change your mind in any way?
Well, it doesn't matter who, as Ed said earlier, it doesn't matter which organization has been singled out for targeting. This is an effort to stifle political dissent in some cases. This is an effort to stifle contributions by individuals to organizations which previously had not had to or had never been asked to disclose their list of donors. And if you've got a political bias that you're bringing into your government work, that's a problem, unless you're an elected official or working for someone who's an elected official. This is an agency that is supposed to be independent of that kind of political electioneering or support for a one-sided political.
Well, I think that, you know, we're going to have to deal with this proclivity of the Republican Party to declare scandal first and then go in search of the scandal afterwards, and I think we'll see this again when we talk about the Benghazi issue. But basically, you know, if we care about fraud and abuse, we should care about organizations that avoid paying taxes when they really aren't social welfare organizations at all. Political organizations. Any organization that's a political party, a political group, has a political agenda, free to do that. They should be encouraged to do that. They should also pay taxes on the money they collect, and they should pay sales tax on the services they use. And it's fraud and abuse for them to seek a tax-exempt status in order to avoid that. And so I think that the broader issue here is after the 2010 Citizens United decision, Citizens United itself was a 501c4 organization. The result of that decision was that it could accept corporate money in order to make a movie and spread negative campaigning about Hillary Clinton in order to try and defeat her. So we now have a situation where under the law, these organizations were allowed to venture into politics and to accept corporate money in a way they never had been before, and applications for 501c4 status doubled. So you clearly had warning signs that there were groups that wanted to abuse the law and wanted to avoid their tax obligations. And so it was appropriate to review these applications carefully. Now, what was inappropriate was to use a litmus test that focused on one side of the political spectrum over the other, because obviously these groups can be abused by anyone. And so what the IRS should have done was had a set of procedures where they reviewed these applications not based on flagging terms like Tea Party, but rather based on neutral factors, objective factors that could apply to both liberal and conservative groups. That's where the mistake was. That's not a scandal. That's not targeting political enemies. That's mid-level managers at the IRS bungling their job.
We will talk a little bit more. We have a number of callers who want to weigh in on this IRS Tea Party story. We will also talk about a couple of other controversies facing the Obama administration this week. We'll talk about this, the Justice Department seizing phone records from the Associated Press. Some are calling for Eric Holder's resignation or firing. And we'll also talk about the Benghazi attack emails, the talking points story that the White House released those emails this week. And many more national and state stories during this edition of our Week in Review, talking with Ed Falone, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University, and Kevin Hermaning, political activist and former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's your views on the news. You can call in after 4 o'clock this afternoon to talk about the news issue from this week that you most want to talk about that matters most to you. That's 4 o'clock, your views on the news here on the Ideas Network. We have with us Kevin Hermaning and Ed Filone talking about the top national and state news stories of the week. And we have another caller, Tim in Ladysmith, who wants to talk about this IRS story. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. One particular gentleman called in and said it really doesn't matter. We want jobs. I think it does matter. Unfortunately, it seems maybe we should limit a president's term to one term, because it seems that every president, the second term is nothing but scandal after scandal. I want to know, you know, who is responsible for this, and I'm sure it's somebody beyond the IRS, because this reeks of political pandering. And if somebody in the Obama administration was responsible for this, which would not surprise me at all, I think if a full investigation needs to be made of this. You know, those on the left always like to bring up Watergate, and to me, this is much more serious than Watergate, or as serious. And I think all of these things, we've got Benghazi, we've got this, we've got the whole Mexican arms thing, and Eric Holder, in my estimation, definitely needs to be fired.
Well, we'll move on to that issue in a bit. But Governor Walker yesterday said that he and Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal sent a letter to the president urging that a special prosecutor investigate this case. He says that the IRS screening of conservative groups is more than just a political scandal. So you would, Kevin Hermaning, want a special prosecutor involved in this?
Well, I'm not sure that I care so much whether or not we have a special prosecutor. I just am tired of the lying in front of the news conferences. I think the president is I think his comments are too cute by half. I mean, when he stood up yesterday in his press conference and said, quote, and you played at the beginning of the broadcast this morning, quote, "I just want to know the facts. We need to get the facts out before the American people." It seems that it's only words. I don't think he's interested in having the Justice Department Attorney General Eric Holder take the heat that is necessary. And yes, I think it does go right up to the top. And I would agree with the caller that not just on this issue, but you know, I think that the president has his own axis of evil, if you will. You know, between Benghazi, the IRS targeting of Obama's political opponents, and now the Justice Department intimidating AP journalists who might discover damaging news about the White House.
Okay, we'll get to that. We'll get to that issue next. But Ed Filone, should we have a special prosecutor investigate this IRS thing?
Well, I have several problems with the reaction to this. I mean, one is, Kevin, it's way too early in the morning to start throwing out phrases like axis of evil in regards to this. I think that it's very illustrative to compare the attitudes of people to the John Doe investigation of Governor Walker, where the liberal side was screaming and yelling that there must be some involvement of Walker in this illegal political activity happening just doors down from his office, and it stinks to the top, and et cetera, et cetera. And the conservatives saying, "You have no evidence of that. You're just on a fishing expedition." And now we flip it around, right, where now the conservatives are screaming and yelling, "It must go to the top with Obama," when, of course, there is no evidence of that. What you have is an IRS policy that was developed to guide their screening of applications. This was not targeting of groups. There were no orders, go after this group, go after that group. These were guidelines that were used to evaluate applications that were coming in the door. It's just the criteria they used specifically focused more attention on groups with a conservative bent than a liberal bent. Now, that was wrong, and that had to be changed, and it should never have happened. But this is not any sort of a targeting of enemies coming from the top, and to suggest it is just irresponsible. I think whether there should be a special prosecutor, I'm sure there'll be congressional hearings. One of the problems is that by coming out so strong with this rhetoric, a lot of the main actors in the IRS are going to be, they've already been threatened by Speaker Boehner with being prosecuted for making false statements to Congress. So a lot of the main actors are probably going to hire lawyers and take the Fifth Amendment because they've already been threatened with criminal prosecution based on their prior statements to Congress. And what that does is it completely frustrates the ability of an investigation to get to the bottom of what happened. So it's very counterproductive to start throwing these allegations and threatening criminal prosecution when these are the witnesses that you need to talk to figure out what happened. We've seen this before many times. Congress is more interested in the heat of making allegations than in actually uncovering what happened.
Let's move on to controversy number two for this edition of The Week in Review. The Justice Department's subpoena of Associated Press phone records. Attorney General Eric Holder testified before a House committee yesterday saying that a serious national security leak made seeking those records necessary, but he insisted he had no involvement in it. He said that it was the Department of Justice's number two official who made the decision. The phone records were from April and May of 2012 and contained personal phone numbers of reporters and AP office numbers in New York, Washington, and Connecticut. Ed Filone, starting with you on the AP story, what do you make of what happened here and the DOJ's actions in general?
Well, I think there's the broader policy, which is part of what the historian Arthur Schlesinger called the imperial presidency, a broader policy of over-classifying information, trying to keep foreign policy facts secret from both Congress and the public because the administration wants to keep opposition from those policies from forming. And aggressively trying to punish leaks of classified information. And all of this control over information is just something that's been happening since the time of Truman in the foreign policy area, and it's something that leads to the imperial presidency, just way too much presidential discretion and control and secrecy in foreign policy matters. So the broader policy of going after leaks, it's been going on since the time of Truman. It's actually very counterproductive because the public generally has a right to know. The second issue is the specific subpoena here. Under Department of Justice policies, when subpoenaing records relating to a news organization that impact on the news gathering process, the policy of the Department of Justice is to first try to negotiate with that news organization and avoid having to issue a subpoena, and then narrowly drafting the subpoena to seek the smallest or narrowest amount of information possible. And I think in this case you had a subpoena that was very broadly drafted, sought a ton of information, and the DOJ invoked a provision in the guideline saying that because of exigent circumstances, they weren't going to inform the news media that they were going to get these phone records. So I think it was probably an over-aggressive, overzealous prosecutor who issued the subpoena, but I think the broader issue is this culture of secrecy and trying to punish leaks, which is really counterproductive. The public has a right to know what's going on in the foreign policy area, and the presidency, regardless of who's in the office, shouldn't frustrate that knowledge.
All right. What's your take, Kevin, on the DOJ going after these AP phone records?
Well, Ed just talked about Mr. Schlesinger and the whole imperial presidency fame that he put forward. And I'm somewhat familiar with this. And the historian also wrote a lot about how concerned he was about excessive secrecy and the disregard for the rule of law that characterized several presidents, particularly in their second terms. And he believed in such things as separation of powers and checks and balances, and he was at the pinnacle of calling on Congress to challenge presidents with regard to rushes to judgment, and he wanted them to, and also media folks, Pulitzer Prize winning historians and journalists who should step forward. And I think the AP here, is seeing the results of a president who has been able to operate unchecked. There have been few difficult questions of this president during his first 4 years, and whether some people want to say, whether I would say or believe in those who would say this president believes he's above the law And it's not just the president, it's the people who serve him. It's the people who stand at his feet, if you will, and look at him in this, this magical way that he is above the rest of us. He's smarter than the rest of us. He has responsibilities that transcend anyone else's ability to operate in a similar role as president of the United States. I think the AP is starting to understand, as many journalists are starting to understand, that he's just a guy who, in some cases, is out of his league, and in other cases, he did not surround himself with the right people. And I think that there's more to this story, again, just similarly to the IRS one that that has not come out. I think that this story, the AP story and the IRS story, are resonating more with the American people than the Benghazi story. I think we're going to talk about that in a moment. I think they're all serious and just as serious, and at least in these two cases, no one died. But I think that the president has a lot of answering to do, and his people are going to be facing tough scrutiny by Congress and their various committees.
And before we get to Benghazi, Republican Party Chairman Reince Priebus says Eric Holder should resign over this story. You agree with that, Kevin?
Well, I think he should resign. I can't recall the issue about 2 years ago, but I thought he should have resigned over a couple of things in the past. And yes, I think this would be a good first step. But I don't. Here's the problem with asking for resignations at this point. Similarly to asking for Mr. Stevens's resignation from the IRS, he wasn't the responsible party for those the targeting of the tax exempt organizations. They have the wrong person, and if we don't get the right person, then what have we really accomplished?
Eric Holder was not involved personally in the issuing of the subpoena or the supervision of that process. This involved an investigation into the leaking of information related to a thwarted terrorist attack. Eric Holder had been questioned as to whether he was the source of the leak, and so he recused himself from the process of subpoenaing the records. And I believe it was the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia who actually ran that process. So there's really no connection at all between Holder.
This reminds me a lot of the Scooter Libby incident during the Bush administration, and I don't think we really got the right guy there either.
Well, I think here, you know, again, the underlying issue, I mean, you know, of course the Republicans are going to scream and yell, scandal, 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 they're going to call for the resignation of Holder because they know that there won't be any attorney general confirmed for the next 2 years afterwards, so anything to weaken the Obama administration. But there's a broader issue. If you look past the heat and the light and the screaming, the broader issue is, why should information about a thwarted terrorist attack be classified, and why should someone who disclosed that be punished unless that information could put in danger the life of an informant? And I'm not sure that there's really evidence of that. It's a historical fact. There was a terrorist plot. It was thwarted. There's absolutely no national security reason to keep that classified. So I think the broader issue is the overclassification of information the public has a right to know, and aggressive policing of leaks by presidents. And again, this goes back. Truman did it. Eisenhower did it. Johnson did it. Kennedy did it. Everyone has done it in the presidency. And this culture of secrecy in foreign policy areas, which serves to aggrandize the powers of the presidency at the expense of the powers of Congress and the ability of the public to know what's going on. And that's the broader problem.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Ed Filone and Kevin Hermaning during this edition of our Week in Review. We are going to talk next about controversy number three, the Benghazi attack emails. But I want to remind listeners that you can call in to talk about the issues that we are talking about during the Week in Review, or you can introduce a new issue from the news this week. Is there something from the news this week that you want to hear our guest talk about? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will, as I mentioned, talk about the Benghazi story next. We'll also talk about the latest in the state budget developments. That's coming up. Well, that's number three, controversy number three. The White House released 99 pages of emails and a page of handwritten notes documenting how the administration crafted its talking points following last September's attack on the U.S. operations in Benghazi, Libya. They show that then-CIA Director David Petraeus objected to the final version that U.N. Ambassador Susan Rice used shortly after the assault. It also shows that Petraeus's deputy crossed out mentions of al-Qaeda and the experience of the Libyan fighters. So, Ed Filone, what's your assessment on where this Benghazi story stands?
Where it stands? Well, it should go nowhere, but the Republicans are going to keep bringing it up and just trying to use it to undermine the Obama presidency and also to try and score some points against Hillary Clinton, seeing her as the most formidable candidate in 2016. We have to understand, right, we're not talking about an administration that told lies or misrepresentations in order to influence a policy or build support for a military operation. Okay, so we're not talking about making up stuff about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq to justify a military operation. We're not talking about misrepresentations or lies being told to cover up the commission of a crime. So we're not talking about Watergate and obstruction of justice here. And we're not talking about lies or misrepresentations being told to cover someone's butt and avoid accountability for something. We had an independent investigation last December. It found that there were faults in security of our overseas Libya. And Hillary Clinton, in January, went and took full responsibility for inadequate security at that facility. About is disagreements between the CIA and the State Department over the course of a few days in how to word public statements about the attack and how much information about the attack to disclose while they're still trying to search for suspects and determine who's behind the attack. Over the course of a few days, they had disagreements, they had back and forth, never any attempt by anyone to avoid accountability for the security issue, never any attempt to hide any wrongdoing or misconduct, and never any attempt to mislead the public in advance of some sort of policy initiative. It's really the worst kind of Monday morning quarterbacking, and I really wish the Republicans would just drop the whole thing.
Kevin.
Well, Ed, I think that you're missing one major factor, and that is that the emails have already shown that the president and his team have not been telling the truth based on the email content. Not to mention the fact that the final teleconference that was held, all of those emails are still missing, and those are going to come out, and they're going to show who actually made the final decision, and that's going to show who's been putting forth a hypocritical face on this for the last 8 months. I think the problem here is that it includes the fact that four people died, including our ambassador, Chris Stevens. It includes the fact that this president and this entire administration has had a very difficult time facing up to the reality that we have a scourge of Islamic extremism. The jihadists are continuing to kill Americans, target Americans everywhere in the world, including within our own borders. And the president really has a difficult time calling terrorism what it is. That's a major issue with conservatives. It is a major issue with constitutionalists. And I think that until the president and his team get real when it comes to facing down the biggest threat of international terrorism and the biggest threat facing our world at this point in time on the international front, I think that that's not going to change. I think people are going to continue to roll their eyes and to laugh every time the president comes out and says that, well, there might be some people who had some, there might have been an act of terror here, but, you know, we have to understand these people. Yes, we need to understand that they're trying to kill Americans and we need to get serious about it. And Benghazi, that story is not going to go away. Robert Woodward came out the other day and said that the president is missing the boat on this. Americans do care about it, though, and I tend to agree with this. At the end of his interview with CNN, he also said that it's unlikely that this is going to gain a foothold for the 2014 elections, because people are much more concerned about economy, unemployment, and what is this administration doing to improve the overall economy, as well as the whole Obamacare and the implementation of that. So Benghazi is important. It's a political sideshow from the rest of what's going on. I think it's right of the Republicans to try to find out who has edited, who's responsible, and who finally, at the end, put their stamp of approval on it. And if it's the president, we need to find out if it's him. Is it worthy of the president being impeached over something like that because he lied about the fact that he did or didn't do it? No, probably not. There are other things that might be worthy of that, particularly what's come out this week on these other two issues. But Benghazi remains a big story, and the Republicans are going to, of course, continue to investigate until they at least get some names of people.
All right, we are going to wrap up a couple of national issues and talk about some of the latest in state politics as our Week in Review continues. And coming up next, it's the Week in Review quiz. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is the Week in Review quiz. One of Wisconsin's congressional representatives sat down with political satirist Stephen Colbert this week to discuss the economy, the wars, Governor Scott Walker's job performance, and even motorcycles. We want to know, who was it? Who was on the Colbert Report this week? From Wisconsin's congressional delegation. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and we'll give you about 5 minutes or so to weigh in on that question, and then we'll announce the winner and the answer at the end of the Week in Review. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Kevin Hermaning, who is a political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party, and Ed Filone, associate professor of law at Marquette University. Still have a couple of national issues to touch on from the news this week before we move on to what's happening at the state capitol. President Obama met with Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel yesterday and other military leaders to address the problem of sexual assault in the military. A recent Pentagon report showed that as many as 26,000 military members may have been sexually assaulted last year. President Obama yesterday saying there's no silver bullet to solve this problem, but is committed to fixing it. So, Kevin Hermaning, what should happen about this?
Well, I think this is a cultural issue that is not necessarily or so much a political issue, and it's a travesty that this is going on. Quite frankly, the elevation of the sexual assault allegations into the public consciousness is a good thing, I believe, because it lets us know that, A, it's going on, and B, if we didn't know or don't know or leaders don't know what's going on, how can they possibly solve it or get to the bottom of it? It's very unfortunate that the person who was appointed to fix it is now involved in it. The president has to do what any commander-in-chief does, and that is appoint people with whom he has confidence to set the tone and to, with the moral composition, to get the job done properly. And I'm hopeful that that will occur. We need women in the military, women in uniform. I was a Marine security guard for a year and a half, and I was in the first class in which women were allowed to participate back in 1979 in Quantico, Virginia, and they played a big role in that class, and gave all of the men in the class a real eye-opening opportunity to grasp the reality that they were not only just as interested, but every bit as capable of doing the job.
Ed Filone?
Well, I agree 100% with Kevin, and I appreciate his insights and his comments. I think that we have integrated the military on a gender basis. We've now recognized women should be able to pursue a military career. They should be able to have a broader opportunity within the military in terms of their job functions. This is all for the good, but unfortunately, there's a culture that these women have to face. And it is the responsibility of the higher-ups in the military to not let this culture stand in the way of this, you know, gender opportunity within the military career path. So it really is the responsibility to break the culture, the old boys culture, and it's not easy, but it has to be done, and the head of the all of the branches of the military has to put appropriate emphasis on that.
And Joy, I just want to be real clear, Joy. I was not only talking, in fact, I wasn't even thinking about the military culture. I was thinking the popular culture of the United States in general, in which we have not shown women the kind of respect that they deserve. And so mine was more of a pop culture reference than a military culture.
We have a lot of state issues. Yeah, we have a lot of state issues that we need to cover, but just very brief reactions. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton signed a bill this week that legalizes gay marriage in Minnesota, making the state the 12th to do so. A quick reaction on the significance of this, Ed Falone?
Well, I think as someone who tends to prefer legislative decision-making on issues like this. I'm happy to see 12 states where same-sex marriage is lawful and the increasing trend among the states to do this through the legislative process. However, it will inevitably lead to more of a patchwork among the states between those states that do recognize same-sex marriage and those states that don't. And that's going to continue to create all sorts of legal issues and problems. And at some point, you know, a national solution would be better just from an efficiency and reduction of legal conflict area. Mm-hmm. But I think it's amazing to me to see how rapidly the public has come to accept same-sex marriage, and it's also heartening to see the legislative process be used to adopt these goals.
And Kevin Hermaning?
Well, had I been in the Minnesota legislature, I would not have voted for this bill. Because I don't believe that marriage as a tying of the knot, if you will, in the legal sense is, involves anybody other than a man and a woman together. But I understand the effort to do this in the legislative process. We're, of course, going to see some legal challenges on constitutional grounds. And I do agree with Ed that in the sense that the patchwork approach that states are taking to put forth this, I think, is ultimately going to lead to an elevated discussion and debate at the federal level. We can have the I actually, as a believer in states' rights, I think it's fine that states are doing this, despite the fact that I disagree personally. This is the way it should be done on any legislation, on any particular bill that is controversial. And I think that they're seeing the movement of the culture, the movement of people in the United States, particularly among young people who do not see this as particularly controversial, play an elevated role. And I think that it's eventually going to make its way all the way to the Supreme Court because you're going to eventually, I don't think in any short period of time at all, but eventually you're going to see congressional action again try to undo the Defense of Marriage Act.
We are going to ask for a lightning round responses from both of you for the state issues that we're going to quickly go through between now and the end of the hour. We'll have much more information on all of these state stories on the State Capitol Report on Monday after 7 o'clock. Governor Walker released numbers showing the state added 32,000 private sector jobs in 2012. However, the job estimate for the month of April of this year shows that the state lost more than 22,000 jobs. Since Walker took office 2 years ago, it appears the state has added more than 62,000 private sector jobs, according to this report. So, Kevin Hermaning, are we in the going in the right direction?
Well, we're going in the right direction because it would be worse if we were losing 62,000 private sector jobs. I guess.
Yeah, but
that goes without saying. But the reality is that the administration has a lot more work to do. We're going to be entering into a political season here in the next 4 to 6 months. We'll be 1 year out from the reelection effort of Governor Walker. The issue of creating 250,000 jobs over 4 years is going to take front and center
attention, and they're going to need to address that. And if they continue to reduce regulation on small businesses like my financial planning firm and other organizations, particularly on the environmental front, I think they're going to continue to add jobs. I just am not sure that they're going to get to the 250,000 that they targeted.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, Ed Flohn on that.
The $250,000 additional job promise in the campaign was simply a cynical promise that if the normal economic cycle rebounding from the recession had taken place, 250,000 jobs would have been created easily. That's simply rebounding from a deep economic trough. But unfortunately, Governor Walker sabotaged his promise by aggressively cutting public funding, cutting take-home pay for public employees, and therefore that's why he's lagging behind the rest of the nation. Simply doing nothing would have been far better.
Governor Walker revised his proposed budget for the UW system. Instead of a $181 million funding increase over the next 2 years, he's scaling that back to $87 million. He's calling for a tuition freeze because of the cash reserves discovered in the UW system's coffers. Ed Flohn, is this a good move, a bad move?
Well, I think that it's fine for the UW system to try and even out their funding over the long term because they have to do long-range planning. This whole thing, to me, just demonstrates failure of communication and a high level of mistrust between UW administrators and legislators. This should have been something that was disclosed and talked about instead of something that caught the legislature by surprise.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Well, let's be real clear. The governor did not propose that the budget to the UW system be cut. In fact, he is proposing an $87 million increase
right. In
the funding for the UW system. And the UW system really has nobody but themselves to blame for this. Kevin O'Reilly, he's cooked his own goose here. The surplus, the slush funds that they've created, we've heard the reasons, the rationale for it, but it is inexcusable, and it's about time that our students are going to get a tuition freeze. We've seen increases in unprecedented percentages over the last decade, and I think that the UW system is going to have to find it's going to have to pay its own way for a change.
Oh, boy. Really quickly, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says that voucher schools should be offered statewide, the private school voucher program, not a view shared by all fellow Republicans. Is expanding school choice to the whole state a good idea, Kevin?
Well, as somebody who believes in school choice, I think it's important that we not single out only a couple of communities and the parents who live there to have that opportunity. But we know that there have been a couple of problems that have occurred in a few areas. Racine and Milwaukee having these voucher programs have resulted in improved test scores for the kids who have taken advantage of those choice opportunities. And it's not only Milwaukee and Racine where we have underprivileged kids, but really what I believe school choice does, it makes our public schools better.
Yeah,
people advocate the opposite, but I don't believe that at all. It makes our public schools better, and that's really what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ed Flohn, we're out of time here for the hour. I do need to announce that Roberta in Adele is the winner of the Week in Review quiz. Which U.S. representative from Wisconsin was on the Colbert Report this week? Well, it was Gwen Moore, U.S. Representative Gwen Moore of Milwaukee. She appeared in Colbert's Better Know a District feature on Wednesday. I would play a clip, but I will get into trouble if I do that, so we'll leave it there. Kevin Hermaning and Ed Flohn, thank you so much for being with us.
Great, thank you.
Ed Flohn, Associate Professor of Law at Marquette University. Kevin Hermaning, a political activist, former chair of the Marathon County Republican Party. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.